हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So page 4. Okay, the hierarchical scheme of consciousness described here is presented by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Chaitanya Shikshamrita as follows. Okay, 1. Niti shunya, atheistic amorality. Then nirishvara naitika, atheistic morality. Seshvara naitika, theistic morality. So that theistic morality means where we accept God as the, how you say, the principle behind why we're doing things properly or not. Right? It means your atheist in morality, it's not about God. It doesn't mean that you can't be God conscious. It just means that it's not about God, your system of morality. Right?
Modern management
theory? Yeah, modern management, modern, you know, any modern, basically, ideology. Right? That's going to be according to that kind of position. Does that make sense? So, but up to Varnashram. So the top of that will be Varnashram. The bottom of it will be the other. On one level, because they're not really, knowing who God is and that properly, that technically your Western religions by consciousness are on the second level of consciousness. But they, when it comes to this aspect, they do, there is the theistic. The reason they're following is because of the Lord. Does that make sense?
My point was
so there's an overlap, you understand? In other words, their lifestyle may be situated in Pranamoy, and much of their moralistic system may be based on Pranamoy, but they do accept a supreme Lord. So ultimately, they will say that the reason you're being good in that is to please the Lord. You understand? So that's the lowest level of this. So you're like your world religions and that. But the standard level would be someone who is following the Vedic system. They're following Varnashram. Right? And they believe in the Lord. So that would put them there.
My question was, what about
ISKCON? What about ISKCON?
Yeah, when we punish people or when we throw stones at people that don't follow just morality. The basis of what it means,
in other words, they're theistic in that they believe in the Lord, but the system of morality they're using is atheistic.
So
you would say socially, they would be functioning on the second level. Philosophically, they'd be functioning on the fifth.
Yeah.
Like that. While these others, they don't actually know God. That's why it's a little bit more hazy in there.
Okay.
So the point is we would be situating socially on the third level. Right, with Naishkarmiya, the fourth, it would bring us to the fifth. So performing the third level without attachment to please Krishna, that's what we do. We'd use third, fourth, and fifth. Though the consciousness is the fifth, but we would situate ourselves on the third as far as social goes. Right, but when you're doing this, pitchfork and torches kind of things, then they're situated on the second, and that's on a good day. because for many, they may be coming from atheistic amorality. They just do whatever they like and this and that. So that's the background. Yes?
I think there's somewhere he describes it as quasi-theistic morality.
It is, because these other two, that he also gives levels.
Yes.
But these are the points of position.
Mm-hmm.
But in one, you can have those who are unsophisticated and those who are sophisticated. So you get those who are atheistic immorality, but they're quite sophisticated in how they go about it.
The British.
Yeah, the British, like that, yeah. It's like, so that can do that there. Then in your atheistic morality, then you're going to have, you know, whether how it's developed, the world religion, all these different things, your philosophy, your all these different ideals, so you'll get a little bit of difference in here also. Like that. So like you said, it's quasi in that. And then you have those, because technically theistic morality means you have to be situated in Varnashram, yes, following the Vedic culture. That's the actual. Just like when we Manamoy. Technically only if you're following Varnashram you're situated in Manamoy. Otherwise you're in Pranamoy. But as that aspect is, because those in practicing world religions would identify with Manamoy, with this theistic morality, you deal with them like that, because then from the stage that they're at in realization, you can take them to that actual position, because they already identify in that way, though their knowledge is not actually very developed. Yes. Like, because they don't know who he is, he doesn't know anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. So, yeah.
Could we project the modes onto, so like Sesvara Naitika in ignorance, passion, and goodness, or?
Well, you'd have pure goodness, then you'd have, they could say is goodness, then you basically say like this. Five is pure goodness,
yes,
right? Four would be goodness.
Yes.
Three would be goodness and passion. Two would be passion and ignorance. And one would be ignorance.
So then you have Varnashram also.
Then you have Varnashram also. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's how you would do it. So the Mayavad, belief in the impersonal temporary God. So we mentioned that is just, you understand you're not the body or the soul, but your understanding of God is still material, so it's not actually transcendental. So the concept of God means is that a form of God, and that is a temporary manifestation you use by using the mode of goodness to get to I'm not sure what. But in any case, Vishnu is accepted as the highest form of goodness. So they'll always put him at the top of the pile. But the problem is if it's only goodness, that means that's all the farther something can take you. Yes, you won't get out of the material world. That's the thing. They impersonalists don't get out of the material world. Mayavadis don't even get to Mahakalapura. They just go to hell. They, you know, so it's just... That's there. But impersonalists, they could get through Mahakalapura.
And the theistic moralists goes to the heavenly planets?
That's generally their position. Now, see, the point of theistic morality as a social situation, that will be used by 3, 4, and 5.
Yes.
So 3, if you're situated at 3 and that's your conscious at 3, you want the heavenly planets, right? Because you see world religions, they talk about going to heaven, you know, and all that. And that was the thing before us. Here was the earth and all that, and then you go to heaven. And then when heaven didn't happen, then they start say, heaven on earth, goodwill to men.
Yes.
Right? So that was the whole thing. It's the heaven on earth. We will, by being goodwill to others, we will create heaven on earth. So since heaven's not coming to us, we'll just make it ourselves.
Yes.
You know, sad. But.
That was the third level?
What is the third level?
Yeah, what you describe right now.
Heaven, yes.
Second?
That would be combining the third with the second. Because what we're saying is before it was, is you just performed and you went to heaven. But what I'm saying is that the idea is heaven. The Karmakandis, they want to go to heaven. So basically the position of theistic morality is you want to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. Like that. Then, using that as a platform, because Varnashram is situated there, but you use that in understanding of you're not the body, you're the soul, then that's what you use for to power your Mayavad, the fourth level, to get to Brahman. So you're performing your duties in Seshat, in Varnashram, but without attachment. That will get you to the fourth level. Right? If I perform them with attachment, ultimately, but in the time of performing it, I'm detached, I'll get to the heavenly planets. If I'm very attached, I'll just get something now. Right? So the more detached gets you higher. Right? Then so the Mayavadis will use that platform to get, you know, to there. The devotees will then use it for sadhana bhakti. So that means with this position of theistic morality, you can either get the heavenly planets, Brahman, or bhakti. Right? Just depending on what your purpose is. If it's I'm doing following the rules so that I get good results from my good following, or I'm following the rules without attachment so that I get liberated, right? Because I wouldn't want to use bad action because that will give a reaction. So good action but without attachment, good work without attachment, then I'll get liberated. But the devotee takes it a step further, does good work, good action without attachment to please Krishna. That gives them bhakti. So we can see as in actuality, socially, there's only the third platform.
Yes.
The second platform means that you want the benefits of the third, and you are the concept that there is a morality, but you're doing it according to your own position. And then the first one is that you just want sense gratification. You know, they have some basic rules. You know, like if I'm eating, don't stick your fingers in my bowl, right? You know, that kind of thing. But that basically, it's just the only reason you do it because the other guy's bigger and he bites off one of your fingers.
So that's why these atheistic scientists, they always talk about like the morality as being inherent in people. It's basically because they're on the lowest level. So,
yes.
So this atheistic morality is actually praised as something higher.
Yes, yes.
It's ideal.
Yes, right there. Because the scientists come up with the things, but what can they do with it?
Yes.
Basically, you never see a science can apply what they have, right, on a broad range. You have to have somebody from the second or third to use it. That they're going to take their invention and use it for the betterment of mankind. Because for them, it's just that you discovered it is good enough. That it's used for, because that's their point. It's just that that it's found. That's all that matter. That you can think about it is good enough.
Because it's not about the application. It's just about themselves.
It's just about the gyan. It's just about the gyan. So that is their position. So it's still atheistic and amoral. And generally, you find that when you get into that level, there's a saying. I don't remember it. It's something about the irony of so intelligent but so sensual.
Yeah.
It basically, that's the principle of it. But it's something that's said within that science community or within the academy or things like that. Because I don't know if any of you have ever dealt with these kind of scientists, especially the ones that are hard sciences. They're very sensually gross. You know? I mean, nerds look like, you know, Casanova compared to them. You know, they're just so socially dysfunctional.
Yes.
But they're so gross, and they're not necessarily very sophisticated. So you can't they can't hide it. It's very obvious, like that. So it's
Maharaj.
Yes.
So wouldn't following one ashram just because it's a superior social system without accepting that it's coming from God actually drop it into pranamoy in one sense?
That would be your intent. But because the thing is your theistic morality. Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. So that would be your upper level, you could say, of the second.
That would be the
because there are those who say that there's the pranamoyists who say is they don't necessarily believe in God, but if the concept of God is accepted, it makes people more moral. So therefore, our moralistic system will work better. So in other words, it's our moral system, and the reason you'll follow it because there's a God. Like that, but it's not necessarily they believe in God, so that would be that kind of like quasi. But even the next one we'll call quasi. But the point is in general, you wouldn't use that term. It depends on how you're looking at it. If you're looking at it compared to pure bhakti, yes, you would say like that. But just on these levels of mundane consciousness, then, you know, they sincerely believe God's there and this and that. They don't know much about, they don't, these things like that. So that's coming from the platform of the soul. But it's not that they're situated on the platform of the soul. It's just that the soul inherently understands as a supreme and that they have a connection they should serve. So
you can be on a gross level and on a subtle level on these, I mean...
That's the thing, it doesn't matter where you... That because you have your level of consciousness, you have your occupation, you have your goals, you know, you have your knowledge... So all these things can be in different places at once. So the idea is devotional service. You should have them all in the same place. You know, or all at least connected to that same place. So everything is about the fifth level, and so everything else connects to there. Like, in other words, I understand I'm not the body for Krishna's pleasure. I follow the Vedic system, my occupational duties for Krishna's pleasure. Right? Whatever material benefits I get from that, I use it for Krishna's pleasure. My senses are engaged in Krishna's pleasure. So that way, all the five levels become properly utilized. So there's nothing missing. While on the other ones, you get something missing. The Mayavad doesn't have the first three. Right? The one on three gets two and one. But the person on two doesn't get the other one. So they may get a bit of two and a bit of one. The person on one gets a little bit of two and that's it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But we might claim that there are devotees who follow devotional. I mean, they want to be devotees, so they are devotees, but they, because of the essential pridoido bhavya, so they fall under what? Atheistic morality, atheistic amorality sometimes. But
yes.
Their level of consciousness, or they want to be
yes.
on a higher level.
Yes, yes.
But they just
so that's just the mix. So all it is, in other words, if we're saying pure devotional service, it means five. If we say mixed devotional service, it's five mixed with one, two, three, four, or any combination. Any singular, any double, any triple, any, you know, all four. You know, so depending on the situation, people use different things. Is that... So that's what we're mixing with. So that's what we have to be careful of. It's like theirs, where we're talking about pure devotional service, and then we come up with, you know, everybody out with their rocks and stones and like things like that. Does that make sense? Yes. I think someone did overdubbed a Monty Python. The one with all the stones. And then I think it was the guy that was there trying to organize the whole thing. Somebody had said Rodhay or something like that. So they're all out to stone him. And then he was saying, you know, what did they do? He said Rodhay, so they start stoning him because he said it. And he just keeps going around. It's pretty funny.
Sure.
The vast majority of conditioned jivas live in subhuman forms of life. That means in one and two. Human starts at three, just for information.
Yes. Make a note.
In the bodies of lower species like animals, bird, and insects, they have no higher intelligence with which to judge ethical values. So they only function on one. So whatever is their nature, that's all they'll do. They'll just judge things according to that. It's not that they think between right and wrong. It's just whatever is their particular variety of methodology. That's what they'll follow. So in that way, then they're following God's laws, but they're not at that level of consciousness. So even though they're following the rules of the universe, you know, which are technically transcendental, they themselves don't get the credit for that. Right? So they're still in the animal species.
Mara,
yes.
Would we say Buddhism is like a higher tier of number two?
Yeah,
but
at the same time as there's the theistic aspect of there, but the whole point is they're atheists,
right?
You know, but they're into atheist immorality, but they base it on Buddha, so therefore it's a weird mix.
Is that a mix of four then, since it's based on Buddha, or no? Not
even. Well, no, because they generally try to get rid of atheistic amorality, because to be a Buddhist you have to do everything right. You're supposed to do good work, so there would be the morality. So you'd also have the belief in an impersonal temporary God,
right?
Like some of them understand Buddha to be
right,
eternal,
yeah.
But. Maybe the Bodhisattva may be a temporary manifestation of, but there isn't the original Buddha. But I don't think that's all schools. I know in Japan of the six schools, only one thinks like that. Now, whether the ones, that, you know, Mahayan, Hinayan, and Tarayan, whether they, I think one of them understands there's the four-armed Buddha who's blue, but they don't talk about that to the general peoples. Like that.
One out of six understand that he's actually a god.
Yes, and the others then they don't.
And then what's generally the destination then?
Buddhist, according to Chuttananda, they end up in the Garbhodak mud.
Okay.
Because then it's all nothingness.
Yes.
Right? You're stuck in the mud and then all you see is darkness like that.
For how long? Do they then come to the material?
He didn't get into how long they stay there, but I'm sure they stay a while. you know, since they're in the mud, as long as they can stay there, is the life of Brahma, and then they'll be chucked out, and then they'll be back in Mahavishnu, and then come back next time. Yeah. So it's not like the impersonalists who can get to Mahakalapura.
Right.
Like that. So unless there's an idea that there's something beyond, they might maximum be able to get there.
Right. So that,
but there's not really much of a difference.
If they perfect that, then they'll at least get to Mahakalapura.
Yeah, they could, or even develop that devotional, yeah, that point of the yogis. And, yeah. Yeah, they would get like to that position. But in other words, all there's these things what can happen, and what exact combination you get, then that's that's why you understand the stations. And then you know that this station will give this, that station will do that. And so in that way you can kind of put together what it is. But it's not really important. The stations are what's important. Mm-hmm. Like that. Because otherwise you can get unlimited mixes of how much this and how much that. And, right? So. Yeah. Okay. Human beings normally have some concept of right and wrong, but only a few apply that understanding consistently in how they act. So there's some idea, but they don't necessarily do like that. You know, if you ask them, they'll say this is right, this is wrong, or there's a concept, but they're not sure. But much of the time, they'll just act according to their own senses. So they have an idea of two, but they'll act in one most of the time, occasionally in two. Like that. So that's... Is that? Yeah. 176. Among them, most are seen devoted to wealth and enjoyment. So that'll be the Nirishvara Naitika, right? Only a few are serious about religious life or entering into heaven. So that would be very few are into three. Most would be about one and two. Right? Most people who regulate the way they act are driven by desires for wealth, power, and sense gratification, not by true respect for religion, dharma. So therefore it's an upadharma or chala dharma or like this kind of thing. Of the few who follow dharma, most do so merely for the sake of public esteem, and even fewer desire elevation to swarga loka. So even those who follow, it's just that people will respect them, that they're religious, they do yajnas, they give in charity and all that. So even you can see is on three, you can get two levels. Those who are following it, but who basically are looking for just the benefit they get now in the way of social esteem. And then some are following because that can be elevated to heavenly planets. Right? Yeah. 177. Of those candidates for heaven, only a few are intent upon working without selfish desire, and among them, fewer still want liberation. Although it is true that the process of nishkama, karma, working without attachment to the fruits of work, encourages the spirit of renunciation, just how effectively it does so varies amongst individuals. Only a few nishkama karma yogis are renounced in their hearts and therefore eager for religion, liberation. Right, so people will use it, but it's just on how much. Like the person performs the activity in nishkarma, but immediately when people praise him, he wants that result. He wants that praise. As soon as you get the praise, you lose the not coming for class.
Oh yeah.
Well, they normally come in the other gate, but there was a sign saying that this is the new gate. So
they're the only ones following.
Yeah. Yeah, they are coming into the gate. It's a whole pilot.
There's a marriage going on here around. That's why I think many people are just orienting themselves where to go.
No, we're talking about those Hanuman monkeys.
Oh, the Hanuman monkeys.
Yes.
Yeah, now
they're also coming through the gate. As a group, they all are standing at the gate and then one by one climbing up there. There's at least another, four or five over there at the gate. So I'm just commenting how they saw the sign and therefore are coming through the gate. Yeah, so then they want that immediate result. Or something this lifetime. Then there's those who are going to follow the nishkarma, but they want the results by being elevated to the heavenly planets next life. Right? Then, he says, of those, very few are renounced in their hearts and therefore eager for liberation. So they're performing the Nishkam Karma Yoga, but so that they'll become liberated. Right? Okay. 178. Of the aspirants for liberation, hardly a few are transcendental, liberated souls. Right? So those who want, very few actually get there. And of those exalted transcendentalists, only a few are dedicated to the devotional service of the Lord. Right? So we can see there were so many in Mahakalapura, but then, you know, and then Gopakumar is sitting there watching. Persons firmly fixed in the practice of yoga are called hamsas. And those who have factually realized the self are called paramahamsas. Right, so when you're situated in devotional service, I mean situated in yoga, you're a hamsa. When you've realized that, then that's paramahamsa. Right, so technically you could say on one level, only devotees are paramahamsa. Because they actually realize the position of the soul. And so then everybody else, I mean, then your impersonalists would be hamsas. Right? Or you can look at it more generic, those who are situated properly in their practice of yoga and are fixed, they're hamsas. And then those who are realized are liberated are paramahamsas. So that would mean your madhyamas would be hamsas, your uttamas would be paramahamsas. Is that? Among all paramahamsas, only a few are completely perfect. And of those perfected beings, fewer still have no desire other than the selfless devotional service of the personality of Godhead. Those most rare persons have the sharpest, intelligent, and gravest purpose. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, they understand how insignificant liberation is. They are called Mahashayas, wise souls, by virtue of their unbounded and unalloyed enthusiasm for Bhakti Ras. Right, so they're Mahashayas. So then you see it sometimes in, I think, the songs of the Acharyas and stuff, they sometimes use that term Mahashaya.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like that. I can't, one doesn't come to mind now, but. Yeah, so sometimes you hear them use that.
You know, Thakur uses it in different songs.
Different songs about Mahashaya. Yes, okay. So this is different from just the Bengali term Mahashaya, simply means a teacher. Right, so a respected teacher would be Mahashaya, like that, and then it just goes down into Moshaya. Sanskrit is Mahashaya, and then it becomes Moshaya.
Okay. I'm shy.
Mo.
Yeah. Mo.
Yeah. As Sri Parikrama Maharaj told Sukadeva Goswami in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 6:14, 3-5. In this material world, there are as many living entities as atoms. Among these living entities, so that's quite a bit.
Yes.
That is serious. A very few are human beings. And among them, few are interested in following religious principles.
So there must be many who don't have gross bodies.
That are gross, or the gross bodies, I mean, how many bacteria in this room?
But how many atoms are they made up of?
True. Yeah, could be. Who knows? But it's just, you know, the main point is there's tons of them. Just like we look at it, that we have this body and there's one of us.
Yes.
But actually there's probably millions and billions of living entities in this body. We're just the one conscious of the whole body, while these other ones are just conscious of their part of the body. You know. So like that. But the point is that there's some kind of a symbiotic relationship, that when the main living entity leaves the body, then all the other living entities have to leave the body also. Yeah.
Within a certain time frame, it's time to quit.
Yeah, so it's just, so that's that. So there's unlimited living entities there. But, you know, but because you're going by who's conscious, then that's the point you're making. Mm-hmm. So generally when you talk about species of life, it's who's conscious, of that particular form. Yeah. O best of the Brahmanas, Sukadeva Goswami, out of many persons who follow religious principles, only a few desire liberation from the material world. And among many thousands who desire liberation, one may actually achieve liberation. Right, because you go to the yoga studios, there's thousands who talk about liberation.
Yes.
Yeah, but who's liberated? Right? So.
Well,
give
liberation they're talking.
I don't know, they talk about the oneness.
Enlightenment.
Enlightenment.
Usually they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's probably.
Words
yeah.
They use.
Yeah, but here I'm sure he's talking about in India, where they do know what they're talking about. But still, how many get there? So let alone the quasi-liberationists. Yes. Okay, among many thousands who desire liberation, one may actually achieve liberation, giving up material attachment to society, friendship, love, country, home, wife, and children. You know, one can maybe pick one of them, but you have to have the whole package, right?
Yeah.
But I got how many are here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I got 6 out of 7.
That's good.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, could we call liberated? Nope. Got to get the last one. And among many thousands of such liberated persons, one who can understand the true meaning of liberation is very rare. Right? So that means Mahakalapura must be full of liberated living entities. But how many are, but devotees then are very rare. So they're the special. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. Right?
So, the spiritual world is 3 times bigger than the material.
Right.
So you'd have more liberated devotees, right, than... So.
No, it means in jivas, I mean, because size it's 3/4, 1/4, but in jivas it's 9 out of 10.
Yes. So this is from the material point of view, that in the material world, fewer as we progress.
Yes.
But from a spiritual perspective, it's actually very different. That's 9 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah, it means 9 out of 10. Yeah. So it means it's.
So
but from here we're looking, because also it's here something interesting, that it must. Of thousands of such liberated persons, one who can understand the true meaning of liberation is rare.
Yes.
So they actually understand the position, not that they're just detached.
Yes.
And on that, but they're actually situated like that. And then of those, among many millions of those who are liberated and perfect in knowledge,
yes,
then one may be a devotee.
So that's among the 1/10.
Yeah, this is all among the 1/10.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so they're, because in the spiritual world, devotees are pretty standard.
Yes.
Yes.
9 out of 10.
Means 9 out of 10 jivas choose devotional service, and 1 out of 10 decide, I want to be the Lord Master of all I survey. So in that way, you could say, we're the winners, right? Here we are.
We got what we wanted.
Yeah. Yes. In his commentary on these verses, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in detail the obstacles faced by the jnani on the path of liberation. Right. So how rare it is, and you see as you go up how difficult it is. So that's what he's going to describe. But for the devotee, this is all very easy. In his commentary on these verses, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in detail the obstacles faced by the jnani on the path of liberation. It has been said that among the liberated, one may attain perfection. Many perform sadhana for liberation, but do not attain liberation. And all those who attain liberation, Jivan Mukta, do not all become perfect. Only some do, for it is said, The Jivan Muktas again become bound by karma if they commit offense to the Lord, possessor of inconceivable great energy. So that basically means all Mayavadis. Those who attain perfection and get liberation attain Sayuja, merging in the Brahman. The devotee of Narayana, Narayana Parayana, is rarer than those liberated persons compared to the Jivan Muktas. And the liberated person, the devotee of Narayana, is rare because of his superiority. Footnote 1. Srila Prabhupada further explains in Srimad Bhagavatam purport. Simply desiring mukti or liberation is insufficient. One must become factually liberated. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge. And therefore he situates himself in the Vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. One should then further progress to the platform of sannyas, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and to be afflicted by materialistic life. Even though one desires to be liberated, this does not mean he is liberated. Only rarely is someone liberated. Indeed, although many men take sannyas to become liberated, because of their imperfections, they again become attached to women, material activities, social welfare work, and so on. Remember in the... Yeah, so the principle is that they're trying, and they see that this is a goal. So we're not talking about who's doing this just because... it will look good, or you know, the social prestige, but they're actually sincerely trying for that. They think that's the goal. But because of the lack of devotional service, we see it's very rare they can ever stay there. So they again fall back in. So that's the point, is you have so many who talk about it, have the goal, but they're not really sincerely endeavoring for it. Then, so there's rare that there's one who sincerely endeavors for it. Right, and so sincerely endeavoring for it, of those, most then get up to some kind of a level, but then fall back in, because you know it's a very dry position for the soul. Right, then of those, very few actually make it to the liberated platform. Then of those who are on the liberated platform, out of millions of those, then you talk about one may be a devotee of the Lord. Right, so it's very rare. It's just like I think it was the Chandrasekhar Acharya. I'm not sure how far down the line we are now. I don't think anybody here would be up to date. In the Kamakotipitam? Ring a bell? No. Okay, so that. So you have the Shankara Mats, the four main Mats, right? But then there's a fifth one that was started, I'm not sure, some long time ago, like 900 years ago or something like that. So there was something happened, I think, at the main one. What is that main one called? Wow, it's been a while. I'm out of touch. So the acharya there escaped, and they started this mat, so they're out of the way. And then after some time, I'm not sure how long it was, but it wasn't a short time, but it wasn't a long time. You know, it may have been a few hundred years or something. Then the place was safe. Then they went back and re-set up that Sringeri. They set up that mat. So then for some of them, they considered that just the four is the main thing, and that Kamakoti was just established just as a temporary thing, a temporary 200 years. Right? But then those at Kamakoti Mat, then they considered that they're a bona fide Shankara Mat. Right? So there's always, you know, this kind of stuff going on. For those who aren't interested in social prestige or status and that, they very much fight over these things, right? So then you had the main Shankara at the Kamakotipitam. So he was quite renowned. He was probably the biggest scholar of all the Shankaracharyas. Well-known, wrote many books, and you know, he's a great scholar on the Vedic culture and like this. So then he had a junior, and then. Yeah, he had a junior. Then, I'm not sure if he became the senior or before. I think it was still when Chandrasekhar was still the senior. One day he just disappeared. No one knew what happened to him and this and that. So basically I think he just freaked out. you know, and he disappeared. But then some weeks later, 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, he showed up in one of their small little motts out of the way somewhere, and now he was, you know, starting some new kind of project to, you know, do all this welfare work and help all the people in certain ways, and everybody thought this is great. In other words, the guy had basically blooped, and then somehow or another he dropped from that impersonal platform to the welfare. So he went from the, you know, serious practitioner, he fell back in, what Prabhupada always talks about. But because you present it as welfare work and all this and that, then because that connects with religion, then everybody thinks this is great and it's actually a step forward and all that. And then I think he became the, you know, then he became the senior, and then his junior at the time would have become the middle one, and then who knows if they had a third junior. Because when Chandrasekhar was there, they actually had three, him, the middle, and then the kid. So that's just what happens. They tend to always fall back into doing welfare work and that, because actually if they're true impersonalists, they won't be worried about welfare work like that. They'll be doing their sadhana and everything nicely, you know, and following the culture. If someone comes and they have something, you know, they'll share, they'll do that, but they won't have organized welfare work, because that wouldn't be their position. So when they take that up, they can understand that they come into this position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So basically you can say the Maya bodies generally will always fall back into that because of their offense to the Lord. Right? They'll only get up to a certain level and then fall back in. Okay. Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, you even see it even in those who are being renounced. It's not a very uncommon. Dhanam Janam Sundarim. Right? So it's like wealth, women, followers, or at least wealth, women, and praise. You know, you see that much of the time, and that some are very, very absorbed in that. Someone was just telling me yesterday about because they would work on doing these you know, big level, high level fundraising, you know, like on world level kind of stuff, and for all these like NGOs and that kind of thing like that. So one time they were doing something for a religious group, but the men in the religion are very proud, very arrogant, very absorbed in the amount of money that they were having and power and influence that they had, because of their position as religious personalities. Therefore they would have a lot of money. So we're talking about here funds, you know, you're doing trust funds and stuff, you're talking about millions here, we're not talking about less. And so then they were very attached to that. So when wanting to apply it, they didn't want to lose the position of, it's like if they take that money and then invest it somewhere else, then they don't have it in the bank, so they don't have the connection with the banks and the authority and influence they have from that connection, because bankers are quite influential. So they were worried about, well, how to increase the money without keeping it in the bank. Right, they wanted to keep it in the bank, you know. So that's then the person just said, forget it. But the point was is that they found that they were very arrogant, worried about prestige, worried about the, you know, the praise, money, position like this. Yes?
Could we say that?
Does that make sense? So that means somebody who is situated nicely, and these are you know, celibates. You know, so they were, you know, situated, you could say, in the path of renunciation or for liberation. But they go up to a particular point and then they fall back in and get involved in welfare work, and these, they're worrying about these things. So it's a pretty standard formula. Right? Yeah. Yes.
So wealth, followers, and beauty or women, could that be like the three varnas? Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Shudra?
It's generally defined as subtle sense gratification. Mm-hmm. Means you have gross sense gratification, but some can cross that, but they don't necessarily cross subtle. Mm-hmm. So they'll get caught there.
Yeah. But it's a similar kind of mentality, isn't it? I mean, wealth and vice is obvious, but
That's there, but at the same time, as even if you have authority, you have power, administrative power, what's the point without money? But, you know, unless there's opulence, is how much, you know, so they kind of go together. But you might be able to, but you might say one has more inclination to one or the other, but it's not that. Yeah, it's not that there's the problem's not there throughout. Yeah. So that's. Yes. Yes.
Maharaja, with Mayavadis and impersonalists and renunciates, there's a lot of falling down. Is it because the Krishna support isn't there?
It's because they're working on their own determination. And because the nature of the soul is not to be impersonal, it's going to be very hard to maintain that position. But the path of karma is frustrating because it's not satisfying, because it also doesn't satisfy the soul. So that's the difficulty, is karma and jnana don't satisfy the soul. So you perform karma, but after a while, you'll get frustrated, so you'll give that up and go for jnana.
It doesn't satisfy Krishna as well.
Yes, of course, but I'm just saying is that they're working on their own power. So that's why then they're always going to be falling down from the position. That's samsara. Samsara means half the time you're going up and half the time you're going down. So people go up till they attain a certain level, then they get distracted, and then they'll be on the way down. It's like you get to the heavenly planets. Everything there works very nice. You have all kinds of facilities and everything like that without any work. So when your piety is up, you come back to Earth. Now some will use that piety and then go back again. So you do have that cycle that you can keep. You can keep the cycle of up and down within human to demigod, human to demigod. Right, so you're doing your piety, you get up to the demigod level, it runs out, you come back down to the human level. So that's what's mentioned in karma. Right? You perform sacrifice that then generates the you know, the sun soaking up the water, the moon turning it into clouds, then you get the rain, you get grains, you get salmon, then you get the next living entity. So the person goes up to the heavenly planets through the sacrifice, then when their time is up, they fall in the rain. Then they come as, then there's grain, they're eaten by the pious person, then injected into the womb, then you give birth to a pious person who performs sacrifice. From that, again, they go to the next life, to the heavenly planet. So it just goes in that cycle. Or you have those who are used to a high level of sense gratification, they don't get it here, they take up sinful life to try to maintain some semblance of that. And so then they just head down, they go. So their cycle of samsara is a bit bigger. Does that make sense? Yeah. And most likely that's all in the overall bigger, right? Because you're doing the other one, but it's probably up in the top on the way up, and then you know, yeah, cycles within cycles. Yeah. So it gets quite... Okay.
It's fun to watch sometimes.
Yes. Okay, then, or one can consider this in another way. There are two types. The footnote continues. Jnanis, yogis, and karmis, devoid of devotional service, are called offenders. Right? So that's the point, is they can only get up to a certain level and then they'll fall down. So they never actually become realized in liberation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi Krishne Aparadhi. One who thinks that everything is Maya instead of thinking that everything is Krishna is called an Aparadhi, or offended. See, if you think everything is Krishna, that's a Brahmavadi.
Yes.
Right? So they're correct, but they're only on the basic level correct, because then there's beyond that. There's Krishna as Paramatma, there's Krishna as Bhagavan. Right? So up to liberation, that aspect is correct. But beyond on the liberated platform, that they make no distinction. So therefore, if you make no distinction, you end up with the generic is Brahman. So then that's another thing. But Mayavadis think everything is Maya. So do the Buddhists. Right? Buddhists, it doesn't exist. Mayavadis, it doesn't exist either. differences, whether it's going to whether the lights are on or the lights are off. That's the main difference between the two.
But you said once those bridges, they're stuck in the mud.
Yes, because the lights are off. Then you get to Mahakala Pura. Huh? The muddy road to Mahakala Pura.
Is one the path to enlightenment and the other one to enlightenment?
Unlightenment, yes, yes. Yes, basically.
You sometimes see this mentality even within devotees.
Is Maya? Yes, because then, but it won't fare them well in the long run. Because the point is if you don't engage the senses, how strong are we to not engage the senses? Because if we follow the path of not engaging the senses and not actually having, I mean, being God conscious but not engaging the senses, then you end up with basically things like the Spanish Inquisition. Like that. And so there's always a problem there. Because it's just like this. Let us say you bring the guy in for torture. Right? So, he'll be tortured in whatever way he's tortured, whatever's the standard, method of the day. What happens if, and then who's doing this? These are the priests, right? Now, what happens if you bring in a girl who's supposedly a witch? Right? You have to first remove all their clothes because you have to show her sins before God. Why don't you take off the clothes of the guy and show his sins before God?
Who needs to see his sins?
Yeah, no one wants to see his sins. Her sins are better looking than their sins, right? You understand? So the whole point is this: it's just the frustration of the senses.
Yeah.
And then when they take off their clothes and they become more disturbed, then that proves they're a witch because they have that power over you. So then it's weird. So the whole point is these problems come up. So if you don't engage the senses, then how long can you go on that way? Mm-hmm. Right? You understand?
Yeah.
But you'll find, I don't know if you find it everywhere, but you would find that a lot amongst those on the other side of the pond. And we mean the Atlantic pond, not the Mediterranean pond. Here. So because there they have a sense of Puritanism. That was one group, the Puritans. So you have these groups over there who don't get involved in anything to do with anything fine. No music, no dancing, no, anything, that's fine that would engage the senses. And they're just committed to the Lord. So the tendency is those will become very dry. And then if somebody does something wrong, they can be quite harsh. So therefore, you had the same thing over there, Salem witch trials and all those kinds of things. Because over there, even though it's funny that they escaped Europe because of religious persecution, then many of this, I think Rhode Island was the only state of the 13 colonies that it didn't matter which kind of Christian you were. I think you had to be Christian, but there was no official state religion. But some of the other states, if you were not that particular religion of Christianity, and they caught you, you'd be hanged. Like that. So if you were just a different branch of Christianity, then you were... Yeah. And this is by the people who escaped Europe for religious freedom. Right, so... Huh?
That's how they were raised.
Yeah, it's by habit. It's just... So that's my point, is that if you're not connecting your senses to devotional service and engaging that way, it always creates this kind of cramped mentality that has a tendency to take retribution as much more valuable than it actually is. So generally, when the senses are engaged nicely, then there's just much more. Does that make sense? So it's just like, what is the Christian way to engage the senses that is religious? You don't have any. So that's the thing. It's
blood of Christ.
Huh?
Blood of Christ. Body of Christ. That's it.
So that would mean then the choir would be the most engaged.
Yeah.
Right? Well?
Yeah.
That makes sense? Huh? kirtan. No, not because the kirtan. Because after the program, all the leftover crackers and wine, they have to drink and eat, right? You know, because they're not going to throw it away.
Sure.
So. Someone brings some cheese. And,
I got cheese.
I brought mustard.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So then you have a problem there. Well, you see, those that accommodate, they're much more pleasant and interact. Like the Hindus, they can accommodate. The Jews, they can accommodate. You know, just have those that eating and all that is part of their system. Yeah. The culture is part of the religion. Then it's much more comfortable, right? Or those who have the leftover, they're still following a pagan lifestyle that did accommodate that, even though they may be. Have taken up Christianity or something, you know, then you know, it still has something there left over. But otherwise, if it's just that purely Christian position, there isn't a culture to it. So that's the point, how the Western means you have the whole world, and then you have, you know, then you have the West, the first world. The first world is that kind of world that they don't relate to the rest of the world because they don't have the culture that the rest of the world has. They may have the intelligence, sophistication, power, you know, money, authority, but they don't have the culture.
That's like the newborn Christian kind of thing.
No. I'm just talking about just the Western Europe, or you know, like this, that they don't have that natural, relaxed, personal kind of thing that you find in the second, third world.
Yeah.
But because. So it's a funny thing, is that the one has the sophistication but doesn't have that personal. The other has the personal but doesn't have the sophistication. So each one thinks the other one's off the wall. Like that. So only you find with the Vedic you can put it together very nicely. You can have the sophistication and have the culture. Or even if you don't have the sophistication, you can still have the culture. You know, so it works very, very, it works much better. It's a more efficient system. So when you add God into it, and religion is based on God consciousness, then it works much better. But if you make it up, so that's the problem. So you have a world religion where the morality is made up, the lifestyle is made up, then there's always going to be a conflict. You know. So that's I think why at some point, I forget who it was, but Thomas, not the train, you know, the is it Aquinas, is that how you say it? Thomas Aquinas. Yeah, that's how you say it. Aquinas. So he was asked by the church to merge Aristotle. Or Aristotelian theory with Catholicism, so that this whole problem with science and would be solved. And it seemed to have kind of put things at bay for a few hundred years, but eventually it didn't work. Because I think that was one of the problems with, I think, Galileo. He proved something of Aristotle, you know, when it came to science, wrong. And so then, because Catholicism had identified with Aristotle, then therefore now he was going against the church by dropping, you know, whatever he dropped off of, you know, the Tower of Pisa. Yes.
To finish the point about this not seeing everything connected to Krishna, it seems that you know, within ISKCON we have sannyasis falling down, so it seems that there is a connection to some of them maybe not understanding that everything is connected to Krishna, and then having this tendency, you know, towards an impersonalist approach.
That it can be there, it can just be generally in this case when you're talking about within devotees, because what I was talking about before was the materialists, that they don't actually have a way to engage the senses. So because of that, they'll naturally fall down. Devotees have a way of engaging the senses, but by bad habit, they do. Just like the example of, I think it was in, not sure, it would have been in India, but there was, Panchadevita was on the train with Srila Prabhupada. So I'm not sure if it was a coupe or if it was more traveling. So there's just two of them, if there was four traveling. So they're in their compartment. You know, as the train leaves, you can see people. But as the train starts speeding up, it gets to where it's kind of a blur and you don't pay attention. And then as that blur was there, there was this very attractive young girl standing on the platform. And his mind could focus on it as she went by. And he asked Prabhupada about it. How is it that I don't see anything else on the platform? It's just a blur, but then this girl, I don't even know there's a girl there, you know, but the mind just catches that and sees it. Prabhupada says that's just because of habit, you know, previous habit. You're just used to that. So that's also the point, is that we're used to being involved in sense gratification, looking for sense gratification. So whatever is our value in that, then the mind will just go, even though you're not interested, the mind just out of practice does that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then you'll get that. So Prabhupada's point was that, you know, you don't worry about that, you worry about focusing on, in other words, create new samskars. Those are your old samskars, so that comes up, that's your old samskars. So then new samskars you create by identifying as Krishna's servant and performing activities based on that. That'll create new samskars, and so then slowly, slowly that'll overcome the old samskars. Does that make sense? Yes.
So obviously getting ISKCON off the ground was a unique situation, so Prabhupada was working with what he had.
Yes.
In general, what would you say, like, would you say some sannyasi, where on the Shraddha to frame spectrum are you before you... Because it may still come up, even
no, it's there. It means the point is that we're saying if 75% is done by, you could say, the middle of Nishtha, right? So then that's there. But at Ruchi, that's when seriously the attachments to sense gratification start to go. Because then you have a taste in something higher, so that starts to go.
On in another direction. Yeah.
So that mentions at that point it's by, how do you say, it's like storm blowing away dry leaves. You know, it's very quick.
Yeah.
But still, it's still going to take some time. Yeah. Seeing that in bhava, you're still dealing with the fragrance. So we're not talking that... So the point is you're dealing from an advanced level. It's generally thought, oh, if they have anything. Like the other day, I'm not sure if we were discussing or where it was discussing. It came up, the thing is that if somebody's doing something wrong, then they're not... Let's say, like the example is that of a Brahmin. They do something wrong. So then the general tendency will be, oh, they never were a Brahmin. No, but the point is, by the Vedas, it means if they never were a Brahmin, then where's the question of falling down? Falling down means you're on an elevated position, you fall from that. But if you never were a Brahmin in the first place, then where's the question of falling? Right? So that's the whole point. So then they'll generally tend to say those kind of things. So they were never a sannyasi, they were never a guru, they were never advanced, they were never, you know, just, these are easy, but this is, as we mentioned before, this is your standard pitchfork and torches reaction. Because you take morality as the point. But if you understand what you're dealing with, you actually understand what it means that the living entity is conditioned in the material world, and you're trying to get out. One, you understand how great is the obstacle. And two, at the same time, as you understand how powerful is the process. Right? Because how great is the obstacle, you're not surprised. And how powerful the process, therefore you're not worried about it. In other words, it's not good, but, you know, in other words, what can we do to avoid that happening again? But it's not that there needs to be a retribution for that, because it's all illusion anyway. Yes.
Maharaj, you said that on the platform of Nishtha, 75% of that sense gratification...
No, anarthas are removed.
Anarthas.
Yeah, but what is that 25% left? That you don't know. That would be individually.
Right. I heard that like 10 days ago by a class, and I was wondering where this 75% comes from.
Prabhupada mentions it.
Prabhupada mentions.
Which purport? I don't know. You can ask, no. Maybe Pandava Bandava or Jagannath Kirtan can mention the place, possibly. The Prabhupada mentions that. Yes.
Old samskaras, it's been the blast.
All samskaras.
Replaced by new ones, but also burned as well, or just replaced by new ones?
If you could speak a little louder.
Like all samskaras is being replaced by new ones in devotional service, but also burned. Just replaced by devotional service. Like
no, he said...
Burned.
Oh, I was saying Bart, and I was wondering, what has he got to do with this? Burned by devotional service. Yes, you can say it's burned up, meaning that there's no interest anymore. But in other words, there is these aspects, but it's not that you get distracted by how the burning is going on. We focus on how to be involved in the process that does burn up, because it uses that. Also, Rupa Goswami gives the example of soaking seeds in water. Right? You soak a seed in water and take it out, it sprouts. You soak it and leave it in the water, it doesn't sprout. You know, or he gives the example of putting the seeds in a pan and putting it on the heat and roasting them. They won't sprout either. Does that make sense? You know, so you have different examples are given. So it's by the knowledge of the nature of sambandha gyan that burns up all these reactions and everything, but only sambandha gyan and devotional service can burn everything up. But it's not, you don't get involved in, you know, how much the fire, how hot is it, you know, I mean, can you know like that, will my gold ring melt, you know, and stuff like that, and you know, does that make sense? You know, the guy was sitting in his chair, and the next day they come along and only find his shoes sitting there. You know, what was that? That was very popular at one point. You always heard about it. You know those? You know that they just...
spontaneous combustion.
Yes, the spontaneous combustion. It was really big back in the 90s and 80s and stuff like that. I don't know. Either they don't do it anymore and no one cares, right? You know, so the guy next to you just burns up and says, that's so 1980s. Yeah. He's like that. And they turn the guy out. So you don't have to worry that that's going to happen. You know? Is that okay?
Maharaj, sannyas is following or devotees receiving devotional service. Aren't what they did in devotional past just, you know, it just stays there? And
it just stays and it goes on, yes. Unless there's mad elephant offense, then it just stays. So that's the point, is even if they fall, what's the big problem? It means the big problem is that, you know, you're going to have to take up becoming serious at a later point. So it's just a waste of time. But ultimately, there's no big loss because they're going to continue from wherever they left off. You know? But the same point is because they've cultivated that anartha, then that's something more that they got to deal with. So they still have to address that anartha at some point.
But the path continues in the next life.
Yes. But the point is whatever they get up to, that otherwise, it means the thing is if you remember Krishna at the time of death and everything's perfect, you go back to Godhead, right? So if somebody's taking birth, that means there was something not quite ideal. But you have those persons who then they take up devotional service, and very quickly they move into an advanced position. Just like, I don't know, in the recent times now, do you hear of individuals who take up Krishna consciousness and 3 months after joining or opening temples and doing all kinds of expansive preaching and stuff like that?
No.
These days? No. But back in the 60s and early 70s, you did. You know? So the whole point is it's just... In other words, they had advanced to a particular stage before, and that's it stopped there, and then they take up again, and then it moves forward. So what their background is, this and that. So you see some take up the sadhana is very easy, the knowledge is very easy, maybe the devotional understanding is not so easy. So that just means they were scholars or renunciates or other thing in their past lives. So those things they were able to do very, very well. Does that make sense? But then devotional service may be the new aspect. But these other things are not. Someone else in devotional service, that part is very easy for them. Does that make sense? So it just means they're continuing from wherever they've been called. Okay. Okay. Okay, then he's making, or one can consider this in another way. There are two types of jnana, pure and mixed with bhakti. By pure jnana, those who desire liberation cannot achieve it. It is like beating empty husks for grain. Quote, my dear Lord, a devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4, footnote 2. Srila Vishwanath explains elsewhere how foolish one must be to reject bhakti. One cannot achieve success by performing any one of the methods of bhakti. One can achieve success by performing any one of the methods of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting. Then the Sringa Purana confirms this. Quote, since one can easily attain the original personality of Godhead by worshipping him with devotion, using leaves, flowers, fruits, and water, which are freely available, why does one need to endeavor for liberation separately? Shardarta Darshani 10.14.4. And so one's looking for liberation, that's so much trouble, when you can just worship the Lord, you know, without endeavoring for the liberation and already get liberation. Because the trying for liberation on its own, in other words, pure jnana doesn't get you anything except trouble. Right? Jnana mixed with bhakti, that will get you something. Right? Jnana mixed with bhakti has two types. With bhakti in which one does not respect the Lord's form, considering his form material, and with bhakti in which one respects the Lord's form, considering it non-material. By the first type of jnana mixed with bhakti, one will not attain liberation, but one will think one is liberated. Such bhakti destroys ignorance completely, but only partly produces knowledge, vidya, and then disappears. But it gets rid of the ignorance, but it only partially manifests knowledge. And then it will disappear. Because as soon as you get the knowledge, then you think you're liberated, and so you become, and so bhakti disappears. So then you're no longer practicing bhakti anymore. So that's what we were saying before, is that they worship the Lord's form simply to get liberation. So that will get rid of ignorance, right? Because they're respecting the Lord for being in goodness, or the form of pure goodness, right? So they'll get rid of ignorance, but they'll only get partial knowledge. But that partial knowledge will be enough that will give them, make them very proud. Because full knowledge means knowing the Lord. So only knowing Brahman and, you know, the processes of renunciation, the scriptures, that's only partial knowledge. Even though it may be very vast and one may be a great scholar, still it's only partial knowledge. The practitioner thinks bhakti must be discarded for attaining liberation. But without bhakti, a person cannot attain complete knowledge of Brahman. Thus, he cannot merge into Brahman. So unless you have complete knowledge, you can't get to Brahman. So you'd have to maintain that bhakti all the way through till you're liberated. Does that make sense? This is stated in the Gita and also in Bhagavatam with the following verses. Persons who are falsely under the impression of being liberated without devotional service to the Lord may reach up to the point of liberation, but because of their impure consciousness, such so-called liberated persons again fall down into material existence. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Mogha karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim ashuris chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. Among those who cannot distinguish this truth, those who are devotees do not. Among those who cannot distinguish this truth, those who are devotees do not gain salokya. Those who are karmis do not attain their material fruits, and those who are jnanis do not attain liberation. They assume the nature of rakshasas and asuras. Bhagavad Gita 9.2. Okay. The meaning of the Gita verse is as follows. Fools disrespect me for having a human form. Seeing all humans with a material body, they think that my body is also made of matter. In this way, they disrespect me. If they are my devotees but think in this way, then all their desires to attain me become useless. If they are karmis, then all their karmas become useless, and they do not attain swarga. If they are jnanis, then jnana becomes useless, and they do not achieve liberation. Then what do they attain? They are born in the wombs of rakshasas. Okay. Okay, so in other words, don't think Krishna has a material form. Right? Otherwise, then you will simply give joy to the rakshasa gana.
Can we say that in Kali Yuga, Rakshasa's population is growing?
Well, then you'd have to have people who actually know that there is God and he has a form to disregard it. Yeah, then, yes.
Country.
Huh? Whole country.
Yeah.
That's a... Yeah. You could end up like that. So in other words, the heaven that they're looking for is not Swarga, it's Bila Swarga. It'll be the lower heavenly planets, because that's where all the Asuras attain. So by all their austerities and religious practices, then they'll get the heavenly results, but on the lower planetary systems.
The enjoyment's higher there anyway.
Yeah, so... Enjoyment's higher there anyway, so... Get a better bargain. Right?
Because they're not reminded of time because there's no sun there.
Oh, okay.
So they're not stressed out that their time is running out. So therefore, their enjoyment's higher.
Oh, that's why it's higher, yeah. Just because of that aspect. Okay. But then when Sudarshan comes through, then they get stressed. I guess it's more temporary.
But then they die. So.
Maharaj, Srila Govinda Maharaj was explaining how Uddhava was being seen as a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, and in different places I remember how Jnana Mishra Bhakta is being regarded as one who goes to Aishwarya Dham, to Vaikuntha, because
he goes to Dwarka.
Dwarka
is Vaikuntha. But Dwarka is Vaikuntha.
Dwarka is Vaikuntha.
So it works.
Still works.
Yes. Yeah,
so I was now trying to figure out and trying to fit in here this platform, and I got my difficulties.
Which platform?
That the Jnana Mishra Bhakta is actually one who is in Aishwarya Dham or in Vaikuntha.
No, it doesn't say that.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not what it's saying. It's talking about those who can't distinguish about the Lord's transcendental form. So even if they're devotees, but they don't see the Lord's form as transcendental, they'll run into problems. And the jnanis, because they may temporarily use the Lord's form to elevate themselves to a particular point, but they think to get more advanced, they have to stop it.
Yes.
They won't get any farther.
Yes.
Right? And for the karmis, then, who worship and then give up, they won't attain the heavenly planets.
Yes.
But if all of those worship the Lord's form as eternal, then they'll all attain their desires. The devotee will attain Krishna's planet, the jnani will get liberated, and the karmi will make it to the heavenly planets. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes, okay. By the second type of jnana mixed with bhakti, with belief in the form of the Lord, after the destruction of vidya, since vidya is also a cause of bondage. By bhakti, devoid of any mixture of jnana, by bhakti which does not disappear, a person realizes tat padartha, Brahman, and attains merging in Brahman. It is said, Brahma bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kankshati, sama sarveshu bhuteshu.
Extra bhuteshu.
Yeah, I was going to say, where is that? Because it's not going to work. Mad bhaktim labhate param. Having attained the state of Brahman, being a pure soul, he does not lament in loss of what he had, nor does he desire what he does not have. He looks upon all beings beings as equal. Right? Isn't that what the verse said? Sarva bhuteshu bhuteshu. He then manifests prema bhakti. Bhakti yamam, Bhagavad Gita 18:54. Bhakti yamam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tattvataha. Tato mam tattvato.
That should be jnatva.
Yeah.
I suppose here.
How do you say that?
That would be jnatva.
Yes. Oh, Russian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Translation.
Russians would be able to say.
That's Hungarian or something.
Hungarian or something. Okay. Vishate, okay.
This is Bulgarian.
Vishate nad anantaram. Oh, Kiru, true. Yeah, maybe it's Bulgarian. No, this is that.
So it's French-Canadian.
Yeah, it must be.
He's French-Canadian. So he speaks French.
Yeah.
I didn't know he spoke French.
He does.
I would ask him about the French stuff instead of that.
Actually,
the French stuff doesn't like anything that's not exactly French. So.
Yeah, he's been bummed out that he's never asked
him.
Wow, I didn't catch that.
That's not the same when they don't have the accent.
That's true. Less foofing. That's the important part, right? The foof. Like that, because it had in Vrindavan we had Omkar, and he was like so French, you know, it's like that. He was from I can never pronounce it. Was it Champs-Élysées?
Champs-Élysées.
But I don't know if they say the eh at the end. Whatever it is, but you know the street.
Yeah.
So that's like the street.
Like, yeah.
So his mom had a monster apartment on that street. So that means that they were in the, you know, they were on that social level for a long time.
Doesn't get more French than that.
Yeah. So, you know. So yeah. So then, he, you could say, he performed his, how you say. His rightful share of foofing in his life.
Foofing adhikar.
Yeah, he had foofing adhikar. So anytime someone do some of the deities, everything was foofing. However, among those who gain perfection, at the beginning of realizing Brahman, some person may attain pure bhakti by the mercy of some pure bhakta. Then, by gaining the sweetness of bhakti, he will find that merging is tasteless and will surrender to the Lord. So, by the bhakti is there, he has belief in the Lord as the form, but he still wants to merge into the Lord. So he'll attain that, but because he's performing the process of jnana, so he's following the Vedic culture, but at the same time, because he has that aspect of bhakti, then he may come in contact with the devotees, either by your association with other sadhus, or because devotees are part of your process, you may get the association of the pure bhakta, and this way advance from the platform of desiring to merge into devotional service, because you see the taste in devotional service is higher than merging. But otherwise, once it goes later and they're merged in the Brahman there, then there's a good chance they're not going to meet any devotees, because we didn't hear of a lot of devotees running around in Mahakalapura. Yeah, was there. Or Shiva's with his associates. But the point is it doesn't seem that there's a connection between them. He just is there, and then when they come to the point they need to do something, then he sends them back.
Wrong time to meet him.
Yes.
This is just.
Yeah, yes. It's wrong. Yeah, wrong time to meet the devotee. Right? Yeah. So, yes. If the devotee giving mercy has Shanta Bhakta, then the recipient attains Shanta Bhakta. Dasi and other types of bhakti are also implied here. Right. Yes.
Then we can say that it has to be sampradaya, because if you're in a particular sampradaya, then you get that type of bhakti that would be because previously it was according to the guru, but we have a founder, so
Yes. Well, it'll be, it means, yes, but it's still, that's according to Guru. Because what else are they going to be? You're preaching, so what rasa are you going out and giving everybody? You understand? So you're just preaching on behalf of the founder, so then whatever that potency is there, that's what's available. Right? Yeah. Oh, we didn't read the translation of the 1855.
That's true.
Only by bhakti can a person know me as Brahman. Then, knowing me as Brahman, by that bhakti, he merges with me. That's applying it in this context. Because the point is will know is that he merges with me means he attains the nature of the Lord. He attains that transcendental position with the Lord. So the point is here Brahman can mean Brahman Paramatma or Bhagavan. So Bhagavan is part of Brahman. So we're always dealing with part of Brahman. Then knowing me as part of Brahman, by that bhakti he merges with me. In other words, he enters into that state of the Lord. So in other words, it's by bhakti you can attain the state of the Lord. So for even for Brahman realization, since it's the Lord, you still require bhakti to get there. Yeah. Since such bhakti is rarely attained, the word 1,000 is not used, but rather the phrase 10 million. Right? So 1,000 means a lot. But when you're 10 million, you mean that's a koti.
We were talking about the Maharashtra Keto and his 10 million wives. Is that kind of a similar thing? Because 10 million wives sounds like a lot. Literally 10 million. How is that?
That's a problem?
I mean,
he marries a few at a time.
I'm picturing myself in that situation. I'd say, yeah, that's a problem.
But if you don't picture yourself and you picture Maharashtra Keto?
I don't know. I mean, it's like a lot of servants and palaces.
We're talking about something very grand.
So you're gonna marry basically 100,000 at a time and then have 100 weddings like that?
These people live a long time.
Okay.
You know, so it's not that there's a shortage of time.
But we are taking it literally. 10 million times.
The point means what would be the problem in taking it literally? You know what I'm saying? Whether we're focusing on taking it literally or not. The problem is why would one be focusing on the literality?
Just this disclaimer. I don't personally have a problem with it. I'm just wondering what to say if I'm put in that situation.
If you're put into people where you deal with karmis and stuff like that, then you just say it just means he's got
more
bucket
enough.
Loads. Okay. You know, he's got a ridiculous amount
of
work.
Then the problem is it's just myth. It's just
tell him it's not about that. Mm. Tell him the point is that people are happy in this world, that's a myth also. You know, who do you know? Are you happy? Are you just totally sad that this is like life is great and who else do you know is great? You know, it means, what was it? What was that thing? Life is beautiful. But at the end of the movie, the guy's dead. So how beautiful is that? You know, so he said, the point is it's limited in this. So the point is, whether it's a myth or not, the point is there a point to be learned here?
Yes.
Right?
There is.
You know, in other words, like this. Okay, take Cinderella. Okay? She does a duty. She does everything nice. She tries to follow, you know, all the training that her parents gave her, even though her new stepmother and stepsisters are basically the opposite of that. She continues with that. So at the end of the day, who gets the prince?
She does.
And is it by some trick or by some cleverness?
No,
it's just by their attraction, because of the natural attraction. She has, you know, that high grade, you know, the pious qualities, and he being a prince, you know, being born into that, he's born with those qualities, so he appreciates that, right?
Yeah.
And so all this, you know, contriving and trying to get the best for yourself, he sees past that, and she doesn't have that, so then they match really well. While the guys who are into that and Cinderella's, you know, how you call it, stepmother, and so they end up with that.
Yeah.
They don't get the prince.
Yeah.
So is there something to learn from that or not? So you want to go, oh, what's myth? Is this, so is there something to learn or not?
Sure.
So are you going to take the essence? So, you know, we talk about the swan that takes the milk, leaves the water. So are you just going to take the, you know, the water out and leave the milk? You know, so are you going to learn from this, or do we just want to make everything into myth? You know,
the vegan swan.
Yes,
yeah.
True. Vegan swan.
Yeah.
Shoot.
Yes, it is. No,
that's sad. That's sad.
Yeah.
Vegan swan. Yeah. Yes. That's David. That's okay.
That's actually cheaper.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, so is that glorious? They take the water, leave the milk.
Yeah.
Okay. So back again, swan. Myth. Okay.
Yes.
I say, so something to learn. So we do want to take the essence, or do we want to just find fault?
Yeah, we want to basically take
the essence. So that's the point, is that you want to learn something or not? It means if you want to find fault, it says everybody finds fault. It's like that. Even though there are people who do better at it, and therefore they get columns or they get shows dedicated to their fault finding, but in general, everybody can do it,
yeah.
And it's not that glorious. Because, I mean, how many people have a respected column that's syndicated or has a show, and how long does that show last?
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's like I Love Lucy went for 20 years. You know, how long does these guys that just rip everyone to shreds last?
Yeah.
You know?
Apparently it's just designed to justify our own unwillingness to...
Yes. Because then you throw it out. But then we could find myths and all kinds of things. What about all the urban legends that people base their lives on? And, you know, what about, you know, all these different, you know, funny characters in this? You know, people don't, like, get inspired by something that, you know, Mr. Skywalker did, or... You know, the lady with the, you know, the, what do you call it, the buns on the side of her head, or, you know, something like this. And so they try to do stuff like that. That's totally, you know, it is. This, you're not sure if it is or not. But the point is if you can take something valuable from anywhere, why can't you take from this?
Yes.
So you can always try that approach. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Krishna Sandarbha, he gives lines. In other words, all the different mentalities that people could doubt, he gives a line to just neutralize it. That's what it's for. That's why he said this book is written for our mundanes. Many take it that, oh, they're not true. Because the point is how he neutralizes isn't actually against the Shastra. Because if you go back, you can see it does. But it's using an aspect of the Shastra that the person by face value will take it in by his own consciousness,
yeah,
and think he thinks what you, yeah, knows what you're saying,
yeah,
but then he'll go on listening.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole point, is you just want to neutralize it. You know, it's just that, you know, whatever it is, you know, in fact, it's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's his name? Casanova, was it exactly 10,000 girls? You know, actually 10,000? No, what was the other guy, the swashbuckler?
Sure.
Was Laurence Olivier, was he the guy? Or who was the guy in the white horse, you know, always in the, you know, the sands?
Laurence of Arabia?
Yeah, Laurence of Arabia, the guy who always played that.
Yes.
He was a bit of a rat bag, you know, because he would start a movie and then when they halfway through, then he says, "I want to raise, otherwise I'm stopping." So he'd do that every time. He was so popular and they were always so good, they would have put up with him. But he says that he, you know, at the time of the article was written, had been through 12,000 girls, right? So that makes you know, Casanova kind of, you know, okay,
yeah,
but you know, he's been
right,
surpassed.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Of course, I don't think the other guy was in suave, you know, so... You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just... Even from that point, it's a good story, no? 10 million wives, good story, so let's go with it. The point is the guy had tons of wives, trying to have a kid, doesn't have a kid, finally has a kid, gets so euphoric, forgets about all the other wives, they get so jealous that they poison the kid. Okay, now he's lamenting, and then in his lamentation, then it's revealed to him about God consciousness. And then, now he moves forward And then, you know, it's a problem. Because otherwise, well, what happens to 10,000 wives? They did the 10,000 wives, each one have their own palace. And then, you know, you could just go on and on forever. But, you know, it's like... you know, so it's like that, you know. So then you go like, okay, well, you know, Marilyn Monroe, so say with JFK, but then they come into the back entrances like that, but then somebody had to know about it because you had to open that. So were all those guys killed, or were they, you know, like that, or they pay them off? How much did they have to pay? You know, you can just go on and on and on and miss the whole point.
It's basically just gossip applied to our philosophies.
That's all.
It's just
all.
About,
yeah. You know, so that's all. It's just a matter of you don't want to deal with anything that's subtle, or it's just about the subtle. It's not about the point. So the point is metaphysical is what connects the physical to the transcendental. So we use metaphysical to get rid of physical, but then we get rid of metaphysical for the devotional. Right. So we don't use. It's not like these persons where we use the transcendental to attain the metaphysical. Right. So that process we go through, it's not a problem. Right. So that's why we use it. We're not jnanis, because our purpose is bhakti. But we use the knowledge to extract ourselves from the material, right? or to distract the, you know, how you say, the illusion of value of the material, right? Because if you analyze it, it starts to lose its value.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what was the original. Oh, that was in 5. So that would have meant there was a word used there, 10 million. That's a koti. Because then the problem is, if you get into that, and that you get there, then what about Lord Nityananda? You know, or the soul is this, you know, thousands of suns. This is brilliant. You know, so then you can understand they're so small that this body is such a big covering. Does that mean the Yamadutas, when they pull out the soul, they have to make sure they cover quickly, otherwise all the people standing around will get blinded, and then that will cause more of a problem, because... You know, one sun will blind you. You know, thousands of suns that light coming out will blind you. So, how do they keep from blinding you? Do they take the thing, whatever they're going to stick them in, and then, you know, cover them inside there? And so, before bringing them out, you know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Is what overthinks?
Why are Ray-Ban not supporting spiritual growth?
Yes, then you need the sunglasses, yeah.
Basically just a distraction, so you don't have to deal with the act.
Yes, that's all. That's all. That's the real point. So that's why it comes up, like we're coming up to Paranjana. So some like to say, well, it's just an analogy, and then with this you just write it off, we don't have to deal with it. Because it takes material life and just breaks it down to where it has zero value. Like that. So many just like to finesse that. But you have to base that on the previous cantos, which have very clearly shown how to take the conditioning according to one's occupation, engage it in the Lord's service.
And thereby not making
the
material.
Yes. But the point is the reason you have to do that is because material life on its own is absolutely useless. So therefore, you know, Paranjana. But so you already have to base it on the next one. But if you just take it on, then you may get disturbed. So that's the yeah. Okay. As witnessed throughout Gopakumar's journey, even within the category of bhaktas, there exists considerable gradation. Innumerable abodes exist to accommodate the variety of devotional inclinations. Narad Muni and Uddhava are presently preparing to tell Gopakumar about the most confidential abode of all and the superlative glory of its residence. Right. So the point is, as he's gone through all these levels, so that means there's all these levels of bhakti and what aspect of the Lord they're interested in and that. But they're going to tell him now about the topmost. Right? So that's Braj 179. And even among the Supreme Lord's devotees, those eager to give their hearts in exclusive friendship to the lotus feet of Sriman Madan Gopal are by far the most rare, without a doubt. Right? Because exclusive friendship, it's just that. There isn't something else. There's not that and. There's just that. As mentioned above, Pariksit Maharaj also confirmed that among great souls, devotees of Krishna are the most rare. He therefore said, right? So, why mention Pariksit Maharaj here? Anybody remember?
Has he told the whole story?
Yes, this whole story of Gopa Kumar is being told by Pariksit Maharaj.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's Pariksit Maharaj telling this to his mother, Uttara. Right, between when Sukadeva Goswami finished speaking and Takshuka, right, you know, so that, you know, you're not talking about a lot of time.
He's quite effective.
Yes, yeah. And so he had 7 days, so he had to summarize 7 days into much shorter. So that's the Rasik, right? This, what do you call it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Saragrahi. The devotee who can take the essence, right? So Sukadeva Goswami has taken the essence of all the Vedic literatures, all the Puranas, and brought it down into one that can be told in that time, and then he's taking the essence of that and making it into. As mentioned above, Pariksit Maharaj also confirmed that among great souls, devotees of Krishna are the most rare. He therefore said, Vritrasura was situated in the blazing fire of battle and was an infamous, sinful demon, always engaged in giving troubles and anxieties to others. How could such a demon become so greatly Krishna conscious? Srimad Bhagavatam 6:14:6. Yeah. Always engaged in giving troubles and anxieties to others, right? Because the demigods would come and attack him, and he would just swallow their weapons as if it was, you know, wasn't even worth his effort. So that's going to give it anxiety, because the demigods, it's not just that they didn't defeat the demons. It says that all their power that they're so proud of is absolutely useless. Right? You know, so it has been described that a Narayana Parayana, a pure devotee, is rarely found even among millions and millions of persons. Therefore, Pariksit Maharaj was surprised at Vritrasura, whose purpose was to give trouble and anxiety to others, as one of these devotees, even on a battlefield. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:14, 6th purport. Vritrasura's example of devotion is appropriate to the great present stage of Gopakumar's journey, as Srila Prabhupada reveals. Vritrasura has formally prayed, Srimad Bhagavatam 6:11:25. I do not want the facilities for happiness on Brahmaloka, Swarga Loka, or even Dhruvaloka, not to speak of this earth or the lower planets. I simply want to return home back to Godhead. This is the determination of a pure devotee. But the pure devotee is never attracted to any exalted position within this material world. He simply wants to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like the inhabitants of Vrindavana, Srimati Radharani, the gopis, Krishna's father and mother, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's servants. Like so said, Krishna's mother and father, just to distinguish, is not meaning Vasudeva and Devaki. Because they're already in that realm. So now they're showing them about the next realm. He wants to associate with Krishna's atmosphere of Vrindavan's beauty. These are the highest ambitions of a devotee of Krishna. Devotees of Lord Vishnu may aspire for a position in Vaikuntha Loka, but a devotee of Krishna never aspires even for the facilities of Vaikuntha. He wants to return to Goloka Vrindavan and associate with Lord Krishna in his eternal pastimes. Any material pastime, any material happiness is like water in a ditch, whereas the spiritual happiness eternally enjoyed in the spiritual world is like an ocean of nectar in which a devotee wants to swim. Right? You don't want to get into, you know, you see some water in a ditch, you don't, you know, get out your bathing suits and stuff. Right? So that's the point, is that here is an ocean of nectar, right? Not just some water in a ditch. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 10:12:22. Vritrasura, although in the form of a demon, embodies the ultimate stage of consciousness of the jiva. we'll end here.
Did you say Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 12, 20?
No, Ritra Surya, I think, is 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I say 10?
Or maybe it's just me.
Okay. But did I say 6?
Anyway.
I said 6. Okay. So you're just so absorbed now in the pastime, the 10th canto.
Yes.
Just everything sounds
Let's
like
go 10. With that explanation.
Okay. It's 10 million.
Yes.
10.
Ten. Yeah, it's
okay.
All.
Okay. Ten. Canto 10. It's all. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.
Jai.
Sama Veta Bhakti Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura ki.